Welcome back to episode 3 of the American Revolution podcast. We talked about, in last week's show, the ending of the French and Indian War, the signing of the Treaty of Paris between Britain, France, and Spain, and how it fundamentally changed the world. If you looked at a map prior to the French and Indian War, you would have seen Britain with some holdings in the Caribbean and along the eastern seaboard of what we now know as the United States of America. France had large sections of territories in the now known nation of Canada and the western sector of North America. Spain held the state of Florida and several islands in the Caribbean as well. But at the end of the war, Canada has been ceded to the British Crown. Florida now belongs to the British Crown, and several Caribbean islands have traded hands. We talked about the mounting war debt that's going to come out of the war. Britain is going to have to pay off this war debt. They just spent a lot of money, a lot of troops, and a lot of supplies to defeat France and Spain across the globe. So they have to use their best revenue source, the American colonies. As important as the Treaty of Paris was, another document that comes from the British Parliament would also prove to have world-altering effects. On July 4th, 1763, please feel free to input ironic pun anywhere you like it after that, the colonial governors are ordered to forbid settlement past the western crest of the Appalachian Mountains. What we now know as the Proclamation of 1763 set a western barrier. It created an east and a west. It created an east and west Florida and Quebec. What was New France will now be known as the 14th Colony. The territory from the crest of the Appalachians to the Mississippi River, territory won by the British Crown, was to be designated as an Indian preserve to cut down on Indian incursions into the British colonies from the frontiers. The only conditions were that the British forts would be maintained and continuation of transit trade be allowed to continue. Colonists, on the other hand, were, and I quote, to remove themselves from such settlements. I believe everyone can imagine how well the colonists took that, being told that we just captured this land, now you have to give it back to the Indians. And, oh, by the way, your farm will not be protected, so you have to move and go back into British territory. Most influential gentlemen in the British colonies at the time were not appeased by this new proclamation handed down by the British Crown. They will themselves feel that it's just a temporary fix to what will be a much larger problem. George Washington himself will comment on the proclamation, stating to a confidant that it is meant as a temporary expedient to quiet the minds of the Indians. Well, it didn't take very long for them to have to quiet the minds of the Indians. Because before the proclamation even reaches the new territories to start the process of moving out the colonists and allowing the Indians free reign of the territory, the Ottawa Chief Pontiac will attack the settlement at Detroit in what is now today Michigan and lay siege to Fort Pitt. What will become known as Pontiac's Rebellion will be a period of 3 years where the American frontier is set aflame. The frontier areas of present-day Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Maryland will be attacked by the Indians. Pontiac himself will score no less than 8 victories over British forts in the area. But Detroit, being right on the lake, is able to be resupplied, so the Indian siege can't break the spirit of the fort. It will hold out. Same with Fort Pitt. Pitt is the largest of the British forts in the area. Pontiac had prepared for the long siege of the future city of Detroit and Fort Pitt. He besieged the two areas, and with the lake still open to British vessels, supplies were still able to get to Detroit. Fort Pitt, being the largest in the area, did have the ability to withstand a siege, but not for long. In July 1763, Pontiac scored a very notable victory, which is known as the Battle of Bloody Run. Defeating an attack on his camp near Detroit, this period of Indian success ended with the Battle of Bushy Run. On August 5th and 6th, under Colonel Henry Boquet, he took a 450-man relief force to relieve the besieged in Fort Pitt. Feigning military weakness, he'll draw Pontiac's natives into an all-out attack, where the 450 men will proceed to shred the Indian lines with repeated volleys. Not long after that, Pontiac breaks off the siege. Fort Pitt is reinforced, and Detroit is saved. Now, most of the battles of Pontiac's rebellion take place in 1763. Later in that year, the enforcement of the Proclamation Line of 1763 becomes enforced by the British, and an uneasy peace is handled between the British and the Indians. Now, even the Iroquois themselves would say that there was no way the British Crown was going to be able to stop frontier expansion of the colonists. But Pontiac begrudgingly agrees to the cessation of hostilities and will formally surrender in 1766. Now, the second part of the Western expansion takes place in the lower regions in what is going to become the future state of Kentucky. We know it as Lord Dunmer's War. A group of colonials start to move into the Kentucky territory. And of course, the Delaware, Shawnee, and Cherokee that live in the area take offense to that. In April 1774, after the initial attacks of the Indians in the area, the colonists will fight back. A group of settlers under Captain Michael Crespa will attack the Shawnee at Pipe Creek. And later that month, some of Crespa's associates will murder a group of Mingo at Yellow Creek. These events are going to start what is known as Lord Dunmer's War, in which Virginia's royal governor called upon the militia to neutralize the native threat. They will succeed in doing so after the Battle of Point Pleasant in October 1774. The Shawnee were forced to cede lands in the Treaty of Camp Charlotte, but again, peace would not last. The reason I bring up these two major events, along with the Proclamation of 1763, because they do go kind of hand in hand, they're actually going to set up for some major events that are going to happen later in the American Revolution. Now, both sides will have Indian allies, and we'll see how, when one side gets the upper hand, what happens to those Indian allies that side with the defeated. As we continue with our coverage of the Acts of Parliament that sparked the American Revolution, as I end each part, I'm going to kind of give a date, the lifespan, if you will, of the Act itself. The Proclamation of 1763 will, of course, be the longest lasting because it will be signed July 4th of 1763, but will not officially be repealed until the end of the American Revolution in 1783. So the plan is for next week for me to go over the next two acts in our story of the American Revolution. I plan to cover two because the Sugar Act, though pivotal, doesn't have a lot of meat to the story. So I want to, you know, I don't want to put out a 5-minute podcast. So I'm going to cover the Sugar Act and the Currency Act. After I do that, we'll get to the Stamp Act, the Quartering Act, the Townsend Act, and then the eventual Intolerable Acts. In between, we're going to intermingle some major events that we all know and love, like the Boston Massacre and the Boston Tea Party. So, as I end this episode, I want to leave everyone off with another book recommendation. And since I feel that it is still pivotal to our story, I've chosen The Crucible of War, The Fate of Empire in British North America, 1754 to 1766, by Fred Anderson. This is a great book, and as I had given you the French and Indian War recommendation last time, this one is probably the peak of French and Indian War history. For many historians, the Seven Years' War is a mere backdrop, a stepping stone to the American Revolution. I've never felt that way, and neither does Anderson. This book is so expansive, it covers everything and shows how the conflict itself really started to shape the British Empire and sow the seeds of dissension in the North American colonies. So that'll do it for this week. Now, as I stated earlier, the plan is next week, the Sugar Act and the Currency Act. And hopefully, my schedule will alleviate me a little bit of time that I can get the Facebook going. So pretty soon we'll have a Facebook page where people can post comments, questions, concerns, and we can have a nice open forum for talking about anything that we talk about in the show itself. So as always, this is the American Revolutions podcast, and until next week, always remember, keep your powder dry.